become a little attractive. Since the soul is by nature all beautiful, purity brings out the beauty of the soul. Spiritual beauty leads to upliftment of the consciousness and auspiciousness. Right? Pretty clear. So now let us get a little bit into the details of wearing a sari. Sari being the ultimate spiritual and most elegant fashion. Most elegant way to cover the body. It really is. It really is, you know. Most elegant. If people, you know, even if they're a little out of shape with big hips and bums and legs or something, but if the body is nicely covered in the sari, it looks all very attractive and beautiful, you know. But if the same person had some tight pants on or something, it would, you know, look not so beautiful. So it is really most elegant way to cover the body. And it's so, on very practical terms, it's very, you know, it's very appropriate. You're always appropriately dressed to every occasion, you know. It's never wrong, actually. And it fits anyone at any time. Doesn't matter whether you lost 20 kilos or you put on 20 kilos. You don't have to go out and buy new clothes or something. The sari always fits, you know. Whether you're pregnant or not pregnant, doesn't matter, you know. You don't have to constantly change your whole garderobe there, you know, your whole clothes, you know. It's really very practical. You can exchange it, swap it, fits anybody and everybody, you know. It's just very, very, it's perfect, you know, actually, you know. Yes, and above all, it of course it reduces the bodily consciousness, you know. We mentioned it already before a little bit, that it really makes a big difference as soon as you put on kami clothes. If you're a little perceptive, you can feel that it makes a difference to your consciousness, you know. Or the other way around, you might have work where you have to wear kami clothes, but then in the evening when you make this little endeavor and you change into devotional clothes and you put on tilak, it's, you know, you feel like newborn, you know. It's a good way to finish off a busy day, you know. Just get back into devotional clothes, you know. It makes a big difference to the consciousness. Yeah. Well, it's not quite the same. It's kind of like the Kali Yuga sari or something. I mean, even on the altar, I don't know what standard you have here, but usually on the altar there's no gopi skirt allowed, only sari, you know. And also gopi skirt, you can easily cut corners in regards to cleanliness. Like with a sari, you can not really wear them more than one day or something. But gopi skirt, you can wear for a whole week. Nobody will even notice, you know. So sari teaches also more cleanliness, you know, higher standard of cleanliness. Plus, gopi skirt, I think we know it all, very easily degrades to more loose and unchaste, you know, dress code, you know, that people just have a skirt and a little top and some little scarf there, see-through, you know. You see it all the time. Even in Mayapur, you sometimes have people coming to Mangalarti basically just in a skirt and a top, and they have some little, you know, symbolic veil or whatever, but it's just a little, almost like a little handkerchief there or something, you know. It's not serious, you know. Yeah, so like that, it easily turns into something else, you know. But, I mean, you can wear a gopi skirt also like this, that you hardly even notice that it's not a sari or something, you know. But I have to admit, I've never worn a gopi skirt. Because when I joined, there was no gopi skirts. There was only saris, you know. So, and also in a sari, you have to be more cultured in order to know how to move around, you know, without losing it all, and, you know. So it requires a little bit of... Yeah, yeah, of course. I mean, I also put safety pins in because I can only fold in so much or something. But still, you have to, you know a little bit more how to move around. And still, I mean, in India, the women, they do everything in a sari, the garden work, everything. It's not that they can't do things in a sari or something. You know, it just requires to get used to it and know how to move, and, you know, yeah.
What about this, like, new fashion that everybody wants this, like, super wide petticoats?
Yes, there's so many things, isn't it, to draw attention somehow. Well, I guess this is not the worst thing what you can make out of a sari. There's more, you know, more agitating things that you can really turn the sari into the fashion and the mode of passion, you know. Like, I mean, here in this part of the world, it's not as bad as in other parts of the world. You know, for some reason, Russia, Ukraine, it's quite... There are also people, the women have this conditioning, you know, they really wear these high heels and super mini, and, I mean, you know, like in Germany, nobody could even be bothered to balance there on these high heels like this or something, you know, but Ukraine... Does it? Yeah. Does it? Yeah.
And every man is, you look from up.
Yes. I mean, one thing that's getting more and more common, that the sari is pinned really low here, and then up here, you know? I'm sure you have seen this, you know. So it's interesting to understand how the man's mind works. Actually, the man's mind, the men are agitated by the eyes and by the imagination. I mean, the whole principle of sense enjoyment, especially sex life, it's all on the platform of the mind. Simply expecting some satisfaction which actually never comes, you know. So this is how the whole platform of sense enjoyment is based on, and especially the man's mind, always for the man's mind, it's more agitating, you know, to see only a little bit, and then the mind expects to see more and wonders. You know, like the miniskirt, the man's mind thinks, I wonder what is there a little bit higher. You know, so that's what's going on in the man's minds. You know, hankering to see what can't be seen, and that really agitates, you know, and burns there, you know. And the same also with the low decollete, you know, that the man's mind thinks, I wonder what's there a little lower, please, you know, or with the slit skirts or something, you know, then the man's mind wants to see what just can't be seen, unfortunately, you know. So that's how the man's mind works, you know, that's the principle of agitation. For men, it's much more agitating to see a woman with some tiny little bikini on than a naked woman. You know, then it's naked, it's all there. Well, there's nothing to expect anymore. I wonder what's there, it's all there. You know, so then that hankering to see what can't be seen is falling away, you say. So that's what, you know, that's the principle, you know, of this whole unchaste dress that the man's mind is always craving to see what just can't be seen. That's why the see-through is also so agitating, because it gives something but not everything, you know. And that's really what agitates extremely, right? So, and with the sari, one can turn the transcendental fashion also in that kind of fashion, wearing the sari in such a way, you know, that you can see something but not everything, and then this hankering is there, you know, also with this really, really low wearing, you know, again, the man's mind thinks, oh, I wonder what's there a little bit lower, you know, lower, 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 you know, or these trolleys where it is tied in the back, you know, right, these threads. So also a man's mind thinks, oh, all I have to do is pull. And then everything will unfold, you know. Yeah, so once we clearly understand how the man's mind works, women's mind doesn't work like this, you know. For a woman, not so agitating to see a man in a gumshoe or something. You don't start thinking, oh, I wonder what's underneath the gumshoe or something, you know. The woman's mind just doesn't work like that, you know, right? No. Woman's mind gets agitated through the ear, the deep voice, you know. Ooh, this is, you know, exciting for the woman somehow. So they say. Yes.
You write here that it keeps all parts of the body perfectly covered.
If we wear it in a proper way.
If you wear it in a proper way, the waist is to be seen from the side. Because of the shoulders. Yes, I was wondering too. Why are the jollies stopping right like under the breast? Why doesn't the jollies?
Well, mine don't.
It
depends. It depends which tailor you go to.
I heard that traditionally, like in Sari, they didn't wear a choy, that they wrapped it in some like high tech other way, just like covering practically everything. I heard this.
Huh?
Like it's the more traditional way that it was like really much longer, the Sari piece. So you could like wrap it
all. No, also, very often also, you can still see Indian women how they wear the sari in the back. They don't tuck it in the second time around. It goes high up, you know, in the back. And then around. And then they, you know, take the headpiece forward and have it long and tuck it in or something. So, and also, another thing is they... I mean, I have to admit too, I usually wear the sari that it's on the shoulder, but when you see how the Indians wear it, they actually have it over the shoulder, like you're wearing, you know? Yes.
I do it only because I'm too much of a woman.
But that's actually the way the Indian ladies wear the sari.
Oh, well, I only do it because of
this. No matter how you know, skinny or not skinny they are, that's the way how they wear it usually, that the sari always hangs a little bit over there, you know. And it's true, I mean, that's one reason why I also like to wear these chadars, because I also feel a little uncovered when I don't have a chadar on, to be honest, you know. You kind of get so used to this being covered. Yes, that you feel uncomfortable if you're not properly covered, you know. So rather than wearing it like this, I just prefer to have a chadar around, you know. But there's one principle that the breast should always be covered by two layers of cloth. So just to have a t-shirt or something is not really enough. It should be two layers. It should be the cholly and some cloth. A minimum two layers of cloth. You know?
Cloth
Yeah, well, we don't really count that. And it's also interesting, you know, when you see the ladies wearing Punjabi suits, you know, that, how do they call the head part? Tupata. They don't wear it over their head, but they wear it like this, you know, and they cover the front like this. Yes, like this also, but actually the more chaste ladies, they have it just like this, just covering this part, and, you know, like that, you know, and it makes a huge difference when this part is covered. It's amazing. Like, you know, I usually travel with some young girls with assistants, and sometimes I have ladies who are not so well dressed, and then usually after a while, you know, especially if they travel with me as my assistant, I want them to be dressed properly, you know, because it reflects onto me if they're not properly dressed. So I remember once I had a girl, she also was really pinning the, you know, sari this way and then here up, and the whole area was free, you know, and she had a pretty low cut cholli. She had always a nice necklace on, and, you know, this is just the materialistic way of, you know, being free here. So, and for a while I was not saying anything, because often people are very sensitive, and if there's no relationship, it's, people get a little offended or something when you try and tell them. But then after a while, I was really careful that I'm not saying it with some little ego tinge or some down-putting way, but I was really saying it in a nice way, you know, that she should please put her sari in a different way, you know, covering the front. And you would not believe what a difference it made. I mean, her whole aura changed, really, you know, the whole energy changed just by having the sari going up and covering this area, not being across. It made such a huge difference. It was simply amazing. I was shocked myself. The whole person seemed different just from that little thing. Yeah, it was really amazing. And she looked so much more beautiful. It was amazing. It was really amazing. And the most amazing thing was at the Ukrainian festival, we went afterwards together, and some of her friends came and said to her, "You look so beautiful. What did you do?" You know, they couldn't immediately detect what she actually changed in her dress. It was just that little thing of putting the sari up and covering here made a whole change to her whole energy, you know. And then she told them, and then they all said, "Oh, I want to also be like that." And they all changed, yeah, because they recognized this is actually so much more attractive, you know, that chaste way of dressing, you know. Yeah, it was quite impressive, really, to experience what a difference it makes. Such a little thing, you know, because of the whole energy being different, you know. Yeah, so there's so many subtle things there, you know. Let me see what we have here. Yes. Yeah, I once also read a nice thing, Mother Ramburu. I don't know if any of you know her, Ramburu. She once asked a Muslim lady why they cover themselves like this, you know, with burqas and all this, you know. And she got this answer. They were saying, you know, we cover ourselves nicely to cover valuables. Like a woman is considered to be the topmost valuable jewel, and you cover that jewel nicely because you want to protect it. You don't, you know, whatever is valuable for you, you want to protect it and protect it from thieves, you know. So, and that's how, you know, cultured and educated Muslims actually view their ladies, you know, that they see them as very precious, valuable jewels, and they want to protect them from thieves, you know. But when uncovered, you call attention and you put out the message, I'm available for sense gratification. That's basically the message the materialistic beauty sends out, you know. Here I am. I mean, tomorrow, oh, you know, yeah, oh, it is already 5:30. What did we say? From 4:30 to 5:30, right? Yes. We started a little later, yes. Anyway, in the section with protection of the woman, which we leave, I think, for tomorrow. You all look a little tired and worn out here. There it becomes also more clear that, you know, this unchaste dressing is actually a call for protection. You know, that the women call out, here, I'm available, please, somebody come and protect me, ultimately. Yes.
I'm not there tomorrow, that's why I'm galloping ahead.
Okay.
What happens to women who are not protected, who don't have a father?
Or a husband, or a son?
Yeah.
No, I mean, just in the nutshell.
From the beginning, if you don't have a father, and then it might take long to find a husband.
Yes. See, let me just say one thing, just because you're leaving. What? My main part of the whole topic of woman's protection is really that aspect that the marriage is arranged by the parents. That's the most important aspect of woman's protection. Because when the girl, the young girl, can be completely peaceful, my parents will find a nice husband for me. I don't have to worry about this. Then she is completely, her mind is completely peaceful. She doesn't have to go hunting and fishing, how I always say, you know, and call out, here I am, please come and take me, you know. And that has such an influence on the whole society, that thing. I experienced that in Bangladesh 15 years ago when I came there the first time. At that time, the culture was so strict that only the parents and only the parents arranged the marriage. There was no room in the young girls' minds to look for their own husband. This was simply not on. And that really created such a pure atmosphere in the society. And in the beginning, 15 years ago, when I came there the first time, I was shocked how freely the young unmarried girls were associating with the brahmacharis. They were going into their rooms and sitting on their beds, and, you know, I thought, my God, what's going on here, you know? You know, and then I realized, and I talked to the brahmacharis about it, I said, well, we don't do this in the West, you know, how come these girls are coming in your room and all this? And they were looking at me, huh? What's wrong with her, you know? What's on her mind here, you know? And then I realized that this point, that the marriage of the girls is arranged by the parents, that completely frees the mind of the young girls, and there's just absolutely no room in their minds that they could be marrying any of the brahmacharis or something. No, they're the sadhus.
They're off the market.
Yes, yes. Yeah, even some girls, even a few years ago, I every now and again I talk to them and I ask them and so on, you know, just to understand what's on their minds and so on. And they were saying, this idea to marry one of the brahmacharis is so absurd. It's like as if you say we should marry our brother or something, you know. No, no, there's no room for this in the mind, you know. And the root of this is this thing that the woman is protected by the parents, that the parents and only the parents arrange the marriage. That has a huge effect on the whole society. And if that falls away, well, then the poor girl has to look for her own husband. You see? And I remember from my own childhood, this whole question, who will I marry, this starts at a very young age. I remember first class, second class, 6, 7, 8. I always had a favorite boy in the class who I wanted to marry at that age. And it periodically changed. 6 months it was this one, and then 6 months that one, and then the other one, and then the first one. And I remember already as a kid I was wondering, God, isn't that strange? How is it that, you know, I always have some boy I want to marry, and it's sometimes this one, and then that one, and then that one. And what is this? Already as a young girl, I was actually trying to understand and inquire, was inquiring about this, you know. So it starts at very young age. And once I was speaking to one devotee in Ukraine about this, a temple president, and he was laughing. He was saying, guess what? My 3.5-year-old daughter, she just dictated a love letter. You know, she couldn't write herself, so she dictated it. Somebody else had to write it for her, you know. 3.5. That's how it is built in to the woman's vehicle to seek that protection, you know. Already at that age it starts, and as the girl grows up and becomes older, this topic becomes more and more prominent in the mind. It becomes almost a torture. Who will I marry? Where is he? Where is he? Where is he? Where is he? It's a whole thing, you know. Yes. So, and this is why it's such a most important part of the whole women's protection topic, that the parents, it's their duty. A father who is not arranging his daughter's wedding, her husband, he's considered her biggest enemy and the biggest enemy of society, you see.
Do you also mention this in the men's issue?
Why not?
I just wondered.
Yes, I think I have to. You know,
amazing topic.
Yes, it is. And I mean, of course, let's understand things properly. It doesn't mean now that, you know, any of us who had a father who didn't arrange our marriage is our biggest enemy and so on. We have to see it, you know, in time, place and circumstance. And it also doesn't mean that, oh, now we immediately have to arrange the marriage. But simply to get an idea, you know, at this point of the woman's, you know, the girl's husband not being arranged by the parents, this is the main way how Kali Yuga enters, you know, because then she has to go hunting and fishing and the whole atmosphere is contaminated through her vibes and arrows she's shooting and. And the point is, that's why you can't actually blame, you know, young girls if they are dressed like this, because what choice do they have if there's nobody there to take this burden off her mind? You know, she's got no other choice, because it's such a deep urge in the girl's heart that she wants to find this prince, this perfect man there, you know. And because the parents are not arranging it, because that's considered old-fashioned, and, you know.
I remember when I became married, my mind got very peaceful.
Yes, yes,
like,
yes.
Like putting on like a light.
Yes, 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 okay. Yes.
I have 2 girls, 7 and 4 years old, and just recently it came up, they were fighting about one boy, her son.
7 and
4.
There you go. And they both want to marry him,
yeah,
or what?
They were wondering, oh, whom shall we marry? Or we want to marry each other. And then I checked this out, what you taught us last time.
What?
Just what you just said. And I said to them, and my husband also, that Mama and Papa, they will care, they will find nice husbands for you. And they were so peaceful, they were happy, they were laughing, oh, then it's okay. It was really.
Yes.
We just.
Yes, so the more.
We will help you, we will find somebody nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The more, yes, the more we bring up the girls like this from young age, you know, the more we set them at peace, you know. Yes, and especially at that age. I mean, when I think back, my mother, my father, yes, they were my, you know, gurus and whatever, you know, there was complete safety, you know, the mother and father, they're the symbol for security and Geborgenheit and safety and protection, you know, and when at that young age, you plant that idea that don't you worry, we will take care of this. Once you tell them when they're teenagers, you know, then that mood of protection and security and all that, then it's too late, you know. So it really has to be planted right at the very young age. That's exactly what it is, you know. And only if we bring up the children like this, and then of course we really also have to do the job of finding the husband, you know. We can't just only say it, you know. But it's a whole thing. That education has to start at very, very young age, you know, even also what marriage is all about, what is real love, and you know, it all has to be educated, you know, so that we bring up a whole new generation who has different values and viewpoints and worldviews, right, planted, you know, at young age, you know, that they're right from the beginning, they're conditioned in a different way, you know. Yeah, that's the whole idea, you know. So, and I mean, the other day it came up, like Mayapur, you know, people, the girls are unchaste, and it's a big problem, you know, but the root cause is really that thing that the girls are not protected. Somehow we have not been able to offer this protection, you know. That's the whole point. And in India now, there's heavy propaganda there that these arranged marriages is all torture and real love is when you find your own partner. This is all coming in through movies, you know, and that breaks up all the last bits of tradition there, you know, which is still left. Even in Bangladesh, 15 years ago, was very, very strict. Now it's all crumbling already, you know, and the whole boyfriend-girlfriend thing is coming in, you know, like 15 years ago in the whole Bangladesh was no such thing as boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, did not exist. Not within ISKCON, but in general in the country. You see, it's only has come in the last 5 years or something. And where it starts? At the universities. That's where the mixing goes on. Yeah, in the villages, everything is traditional, but in the universities, that's where all the mixing goes on, you know. Yeah, and then the phones, SMSs. Anyway, so we already discussed one topic for tomorrow, basically. No, it's not sorry. It's, you know, it doesn't matter. Yes, okay. All right, so I think we'll leave it at that for today, huh?
What about this women dancing in kirtan
topic? Well, only two sentences, since it's late, 10 to 6. I mean, just remembering the example we read with Devahuti playing ball on the rooftop. You know, I mean, immediately when I read that recently, you know, I immediately, that thought came to my mind. Well, yeah, you know, playing ball on the rooftop. What about dancing in the kirtan, you know?
But actually, if we would all stand in the back still, would be no problem.
Well, in other words, understanding how powerful the feminine energy is, you know, and through movements, especially when they are done with certain intentions and certain consciousness of wanting to attract attention to ourselves, that gives room for the energy to get out there, you know. So it simply shows that we women have to be very, very careful. If we don't want to create havoc around us, we have to be very careful how we dance. It doesn't mean a woman cannot dance. No, we don't make such rules, you know. But we have to be very careful, and we have to be introspective and check our motives. Am I dancing here for my, you know, pleasure and trying to bring attention to me in all kinds of amazing ways, you know? Or am I really, you know, calling out to the Lord, and my dancing comes because I feel so much pleasure connecting with Krishna, and oh, that makes me so joyful that I simply want to move. So that kind of dancing has a completely different quality, you know? I usually discuss this more in detail on the Holy Name Retreat, so you have to come to a Holy Name Retreat one day. But the dancing actually is a manifestation of Ladini Shakti, actually. In one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada describes this, that Mahaprabhu's dancing was not intentionally done, but it was, you know, the Ladini Shakti, the pleasure potency, made him dance. So in other words, the pleasure in kirtan comes from connecting with Krishna. We have to pay the price to connect. And when once we connect, then our heart gets flooded with joy. Every Maha Mantra is a wave of joy and happiness. And then until we feel, oh, I have to get on my feet, I have to move, you know, and dance. So that kind of dancing has a completely different nature and quality than any other kind of dancing, you know. With the other kind of passionate dancing, we are not really so willing to pay the price of connecting, you know. But we kind of try and artificially jump and create some happiness through some crazy dancing or something, you know. But in any case, we simply have to be very, very careful how we dance. In Mayapur, sometimes this has created quite a bit of waves there. I remember, not this year in the Kirtan Mela, but last year, I was not there, but our Bangladeshi boys told me how they were so shocked how these Western women are dancing, and, you know, and it was a whole, must have been a bit of an ugly scene there, you know. And for people who are a little cultured, even this year in the Kirtan Mela, I also saw, so there's always some women who are, you know, not dressed properly and who are simply using kirtan to show off. And it just contaminates the whole atmosphere. It does. You know? It does. What to do? We have to educate people, you know? Often they are unfortunate ladies who are not protected and who are looking for a husband and go hunting and fishing in the Kirtan Mela, you know. We can't actually blame them, you know, because we haven't been able to protect them. That's the point. Okay. Anything else? No, you're tired. Okay, thank you for your patience and tolerance.
Thank you.